Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having a nice week. Someone said you should do a hashtag, Hey Griefsters, carry on. And I thought, I don't know, I'm not sure about that. Don't know how you'll feel about that. But anyway, hello, I hope you're well. So I did mention this last week in the podcast, but who knows if you listen to this beginning bit, if you just do that 30-second skip thing that we all do. We have been nominated for a Chortle Award for Best Internet Thing, Best Podcast Internet Comedian Thing. If you head to the Chortle website, C-H-O-R-T-L-E, just type in Chortle to Google, it'll take you there. You can vote for us. That would mean an awful lot because the people we're up against are huge. We're up against the Guilty Feminists and Adam Buxton and All Killer No Filler. So, you know, they're big shows. So if you would like to vote, just a wee little vote for death, I'd very much appreciate that. And I have said to people, you know, if you don't vote for me, that's fine, but I'm assuming a horde of ghosts will haunt you for the rest of your life. But you won't, Griefsters, because you're the good people. Anyway, we've been nominated for a Chortle Award. This week, I'm talking to writer and actor Carrie Quinlan. Carrie is an incredible lady. She's been on all sorts of things. The Tracy Ullman Show, Yonderland, Miranda. She's also probably maybe best known for being part of John Finnemore's Souvenir Programme, which she is very, very excellent on. She also co-hosts The Guilty Feminist occasionally, and she's just generally an incredibly witty person, as well as being funny. Not everyone's witty. I would say Carrie is extremely witty and extremely lovely as well. Carrie came in to talk to me about her dad, who died 10 years ago. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with actor and writer Carrie Quinlan. Hello.
Hello.
Carrie, we've just been chatting about it so much already. And now I'm like, oh, this is great chatting about
edit
that.
Edit it in.
I know, yeah, we're in the chat. Because you also co-host The Guilty Feminist.
Occasionally, yes, yeah. I do.
As we both do.
Yeah.
That was a very funny moment when we did Guilty Feminist. Do you remember this? We did Guilty Feminist Live.
Yeah.
At the Palladium. And we came outside and people were looking for each other. And it was me, you, Jess Foster Q, and somebody else.
Rachel Paris. Yep.
And Margaret Caborn Smith. But we were talking about hosting. And then someone said something. We all looked at each other, as in me, you, Margaret Caborn Smith, Jess Foster Q. And we all went, oh, she's got a type. Because all of us are like slightly differing versions of brown, curly-haired, funny ladies.
Yes, the dark, curly-haired, funny lady.
And we were like, And then apart from Rachel, who was like the sort of unicorn amongst us, because we were like, oh.
Yeah. So we all just moved away from her.
Yeah, very quickly.
I mean, any excuse.
In case her beautiful blondeness affected our cynical Darlene-esque act that we've been
sullied the Darlene-ness.
Yeah. But isn't that funny? I see a lot. I meet a lot of brown girly.
I think we've all been asked what it's like to be married to Stuart Lee.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, of course, another the queen of the gang.
The queen of the curly haired
queen of the brown curly haired white female comedians is Bridget Christie. Did you love Darlene when you were growing up?
Absolutely loved Darlene.
I completely modelled myself on Darlene.
Yeah. I used to get stopped in the street.
Oh, yeah, because your hair's very curly.
Yeah.
I think it's curlier than mine does, like, half straight, half curly.
It's looking lovely now.
Thank you very much. But I think you could pull off Darlene better than I could.
Yeah. Certainly when I was younger, I got that all the time.
Yeah.
And in fact, endlessly. Endlessly, endlessly. And then a few years ago, I was going out with this guy and he said to me, you know who you remind me of? I went, yeah, Darlene off Roseanne. And he went, no, I've never seen Roseanne. I thought, ooh. Something new. This is really exciting. He went, no, there's this character on The Big Bang Theory called Leslie Wick. That's Darlene from Roseanne. Just never
What is wrong with anything else? That's so funny. Because she's quite different in The Big Bang Theory, isn't she?
And yet here we are.
And then here we are. This is a lame story, but my husband was crossing the road once.
That is a lame story. Is that the whole thing?
That's it.
Oh, wow.
You got to the other side. And Chris Morris was crossing the road at the same time. And Chris Morris, the amazing comedian and writer, is very tall. And my husband's very tall. And he said they both looked at each other like, how comes you're at my eye level? Like, how comes I can see you? Because they don't normally encounter people the same height as them. And he said as they like got to the middle, my husband was like, oh, it's Chris Morris. And then had this slightly awkward like... Oh, but it was. He said it was funny because he could tell Chris Morris was staring at him like he was important, but they both just realised it was a tall men off of like, oh, I don't normally see him on my height.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and he said they sort of like, yeah, both with brown sort of messy hair and looking a bit dishevelled, and we were like, oh, what? That's what I do. What do you do?
Yeah, yeah. Why are you doing my thing?
Yeah. I mean, anyway, on a tangent from Darlene.
I once saw... a little bloke in a massive furry hat being given directions by a tall lady in a massive furry hat.
No.
And it put such a smile on my face. And as I got nearer to them, I realised that the tall lady with the big furry hat was my sister's best friend. And so I continued walking towards them with a big smile on my face. She finished giving directions, started to go. And I went, Jude. And she turned round. She said, oh, it's you. Sorry. And I said, yeah, didn't you see me with the big smile on my face coming towards you? And she said, yeah, I thought it was the hat.
She knew.
Initially, yes.
She thought, this is a funny situation.
This is great.
I hope other people are getting something from this.
Someone's enjoying
like
this.
Like a little performance. That's delightful.
It was great.
Was that before like camera phone time? Were you going to snap it? Yeah.
It was a lovely... But I'm not a camera phone sort.
Oh, yeah, really?
I'm not a picture taker.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm not a picture taker and I get into trouble for it.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Saying funny things and people go, where's the evidence?
Yeah.
Where's the evidence,
Not so much
Karen?
That as my girlfriend saying... I take loads of pictures of you. Why do you never take any pictures? Well, because you take all the pictures.
No, that's not fair.
It's not good.
That's not fair. If someone has the responsibility, then that's annoying. That's pressure on her.
Yeah. Okay, I'm very sorry.
But that's all right, because you've spoken from... My husband takes very good pictures, but not as many as I do.
Right.
So then I think...
So quality over quantity.
Yeah, but then I get annoyed if he doesn't. Yeah, and I think...
Ooh.
I get annoyed now because I bullied him into taking pictures. Cause I was like, you should take more pictures.
Right, and he's better at it than
now.
You.
He's better at it, but now if he doesn't, I get cross. I'm like, well, where's your good pictures of it? I took 20 shit ones. Where's the really beautiful one I can send to my friends? And he's like, oh, I didn't take it. It's like, you've got to take... You're the good one.
You've got the gift.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got... He's really good
at
it.
I really haven't got the gift.
Then don't.
Ali's really good at taking
pictures. Yeah, then don't.
So
if you're rubbish,
that,
I don't want... No one wants...
Yeah.
Half rubbish pictures of people's shoes.
My dad used to take pictures only of landscapes.
Oh, really?
Never, very, very rarely of the family. And the joke in the family was that if any of us was in a photograph, it was for scale. It was only ever for scale.
That's hilarious. So, Carrie, who are we remembering today?
Well. What a segue.
What a
segue. Primarily my dad.
Your dad.
Who died 9.5 years ago.
Wow.
Which just seems insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was an. It seems what's really insane is that it was 9.5 years ago, and I was an adult when he died. That doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
So something to be that long ago, yeah, and it also yeah. it's one of those things where it seems like it's 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It's that really strange.
Well, and also I think you're coming up to 10 years then, which is quite a like I found 10 and 20 sort of significant numbers slightly because it just felt like
because 20 is recent for you, isn't it?
20 is recent. It was this year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when will be 10th anniversary?
10 will be February.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's almost exactly 9.5.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember, six months after he died, I was in Edinburgh. I was doing a show in Edinburgh. That was weird.
Wow.
And just walking around in a daze.
Yeah.
On the 6th month. Because also his birthday is in August, August the 11th.
Oh, right.
And Mum and Dad's wedding anniversary is August the 7th. So there's a sort of run of weirdnesses.
Yeah, God, it's hard, isn't it?
Which is strange.
My mum and dad got married on my dad's birthday.
Oh, wow.
Which means that day is quite tough.
Yeah,
but it does knock two out of the park.
Well, there is that. It gets it out of the way, I
suppose.
That's
the one thing I'd say is like, yeah, we didn't never have to have like, oh, now it's like birthday anniversary. Boom.
Yeah.
Done. And it's before Christmas. Boom. Let's get these things done. Get them done. You don't have to think about
it. Yeah, my dad died about 9 p.m. on my niece's birthday.
Oh.
And we were just like, you prick, you couldn't wait 3 hours just so it's a different date.
Just give her a different date.
Come on.
Yeah. So what did he die of? What happened?
He had cancer. So he originally had prostate cancer.
Oh, okay.
And then that all got sorted out pretty much. 10 years later, it all reemerged and metastasized to his bones and it got a bit grim.
Because prostate cancer is quite common.
Over a certain age, it's like, sort of weird as not to have
if
you're a boy, if you're a girl. Very weird to have it
yes,
indeed.
Yes.
But yeah, it's sort of like, oh yeah, you've got that.
So it was just sort of dealt with.
Yeah, that was dealt with. That was all fine. Probably lingering about slightly.
Yeah, yeah.
As these creepy bastards do.
Yeah, these bastards.
And then 10 years later, he got pains in his back. And I thought, oh, that's a bit strange. Went to the doctor and it turned out he was riddled.
So by the time you found it was sort of way too late.
Yeah, it was,
Did he have any treatment or anything?
He didn't. Not second time round. So he'd had radiotherapy and stuff first time round.
Right.
And then, second time round, that's a really good question. That's a really good question. In my mind, he didn't have particular treatment, and we were just sort of hanging around for the prognosis. And they fairly quickly, they told us that it was terminal.
Right.
And then a couple of months later, they worked out it was going to be one of two types of cancer, and they worked out which one it was, and so gave a sort of datey prognosis, said he won't make the year. At which point, my mum went, "It's going to be less than that, isn't it?" She's a nurse.
Oh wow.
And she went, it's going to be, it might be six. And this was at Christmas
God.
That we got this. And he made it 2 months. So that was weird.
Wow.
Yeah, Mum was thinking Easter, maybe.
That's amazing.
Lasted 2 months, which was...
This is the thing my mum always says, they never gave us a time.
Yeah.
So I always found that really weird when they're like, he's got 6 months on any TV show. Because my mum was like, they never said, they refused to say it. They kept saying, we don't do times.
Yeah.
They kept saying, we'll see. But they were still doing treatment for my dad. And my mum kept saying, what you've just said.
Right.
You just said he's got a secondary tumour and it's like wrapped around his face. She was like, he hasn't got any time. He's dying.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, we don't like to use terms like that, Mrs. Lloyd. And she was like, why will no one say he's dying to me? But that's kind of amazing that your mum was able, because that could have been awful if you thought, well, we've got a year,
totally.
We won't rush anything.
Well, that's the thing, because I get the whole not giving a timescale.
Yeah.
The whole not saying he's dying sounds horrendous.
That's my mum always
horrendous.
Says, like, it was so annoying. She was But then the trouble is, my mum came into the room after the consultant had spoken to my dad.
Right.
So my mum still doesn't know, did my dad say, don't say anything?
Her. Oh, God.
Did they not tell my dad?
Yep.
Because my dad was so positive and like, I'm fine, I'm all well, everything's going to be, we're going to beat this.
Mm.
That my mum's maintained, she said, she thinks that the consultant made a decision not to tell him. She said she felt like, who knows if this is true, I'm sure someone will email me and tell me. She felt like the consultant didn't want to use that word on this particular patient, my dad, who was showing very positive energy and being like, we're going to, and to say he's going to die. But then I was like, Mum, they must have had to tell him. She was like, I don't know. They just wouldn't tell me. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, that is weird.
But like,
that's really weird.
I'm sort of pleased that your mum was able to go, this is worse than it seems?
Yeah, there was a slightly weird thing, though, where Dad, I think, I'm going to misremember loads.
Sure.
but I think Dad, there was something like he broke a rib, and that's when both Mum and Dad knew that it was good. It had gone into his bones and it would be bad.
Course,
but neither of them told the other one that they knew.
Wow.
So Dad had a friend, had an old friend who'd had the same thing happen, and so he clocked it.
Wow.
But for some reason didn't want to tell Mum. And Mum, because of her medical stuff, went, "Oh, okay, that's."
But
didn't want to say to him in case he hadn't.
Oh wow.
Absolutely barking bonkers.
I guess you're both just. You just want to protect.
It's so protective. Yeah, absolutely.
So how old was your dad at the time?
He would have been 88 last week, so he was 79.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, what's his name? We didn't get his name.
Was he 79 or 78? Oh, hang on. He'd have been 78.
78.
Oh, God. I'm terrible at this. See, this is why I need notes.
This is why I
should have made more notes.
You hear me every episode being like, sorry, I can't do the maths. Could you just explain how long ago that was? Yeah, so what was his name?
Michael. Michael Quinlan.
Michael Quinlan. That's a lovely name.
It's a good name, isn't it?
Oh, it's
a good
strong. Solid.
Michael Edward Quinlan.
Oh.
It's a good solid name.
I'm already seeing the monogram. Mm-hmm. Was it monogram? Yeah, the MEQ. That's lovely. Mm. So what was your relationship like before that? Were you particularly close to him?
We were, yeah. So I was the youngest by 6 years. I'm one of four.
Four?
Yeah.
Sorry. And this person with one, I'm always like, what? They did it. They kept going.
Yeah.
So weirdly. You're the youngest of four.
And they really did keep going. So that sounds terrible, doesn't it? So they had my brother. Then 18 months later, I had my sister. Two and a half years, my other brother. 6 years, me. So when I was little, people would say to me, oh, were you a bit of an accident?
Oh,
and my mum would go absolutely postal. She'd be furious.
Yeah, yeah.
Partly because she didn't want me to think I was an accident.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But partly because she'd lost two in between my brother and me.
Yeah.
And so I knew that from quite a young age.
Oh, wow.
And I was really conscious of these other babies.
God.
So not exactly conscious of death because, you know, they were never born.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was very conscious that that I was sort of responsible for three lives.
That's interesting.
Which only hit me recently I only remembered recently that I was really conscious of that. Right, I need to be a good person and work hard and stuff. Thing.
Yeah, that is interesting.
And it wasn't the big thing. It only ever came up if someone went, accident.
Yeah. Just in the street.
Accident. Still get that, but I'm used to it. So the original point was that I'm the youngest by 6 years, so I was at home for longer than the others. And my dad, dad was 45 when I was born.
Right, okay.
Which meant he'd retired when I was still at home.
Wow, yeah.
He then took up another job and was reasonably busy and stuff, but was at home more when I was in my teens and having chats and stuff and arguing about politics and that.
What did he do?
He was a civil servant. Right. He was in the Ministry of Defence.
Wow.
Cool. And but he was ace. We got on really well. And then my mum was ill when I was about 20. She had a brain tumour.
Oh, God.
So that was the first big, oh, God, my parents are mortal.
Whiff of grief.
Moment. And, you know, it got sorted out, got operated on.
Wow.
She's fine. She turned 80 in January.
God,
and
that's amazing.
She's cool. But that was the first, oh, shit, they're not going to be here forever.
Yeah, yeah.
But so I moved back in at home and Dad and I kept an eye on it. So I think we got closer then as well.
Yeah, of course.
I've been really lucky, actually. I got on really well with my parents.
Yeah.
So we were close. It was a... And being the youngest...
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, isn't it, to be...
Yeah.
Because, well, everything I've read about it is that, like, by the time you've had the third or fourth, you're pretty chill. You've been through a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And they always say the youngest kind of benefits from this sort of slightly more relaxed relationship.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And you can get away with more. So you can be...
They're so tired.
They're so tired. You can become an actor.
Yeah. Yes.
Because they've already got a doctor and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so, and you've always been farting about.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
So why not do that for a living?
Yeah.
They're much more relaxed about that. So that's nice.
And then when you were looking after your mum, did you talk about sort of grief and death with him or anything at all? Or
Not particularly, actually. He was terrifically British.
Right. I mean, that name.
Well, it, quite.
Really, yeah.
I mean, apart from the hugely Irish surname, he was very British. He was, you know, he was civil servant.
Yeah.
And so while he was, you know, he was lovely and warm, we probably didn't have those massive heart-to-hearts particularly.
Yeah.
Occasionally, if he thought your life wasn't running to plan, or perhaps as it should, he'd ask you if you wanted to go for a walk. And the rest of the family would look over like,
she's in trouble.
You're in trouble now.
You have to
go for a walk with Dad. Aww. And then we'd have sort of mild heart-to-hearts. But he didn't reveal much.
Yeah.
So we didn't really talk about the implications of... It was very practical.
And then when he was sick...
Yeah.
Did you have to manage those conversations, or was it, again, practical?
It was pretty practical. So he summoned the family.
Wow.
When he knew he was dying, right. He summoned the family for a council of war. He called it a council of war. And we sat around the kitchen table
and
we planned.
Perfect civil servant, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's almost a shame there wasn't like a map with tanks and him moving them around with a stick.
Around. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we had this council of war that was all about funeral.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a bit weird. Tax stuff and probate and all this kind of stuff.
Wow, so he went through with you all?
Like proper, yeah.
That's amazing.
He'd written a document called When I Die. That
oh
we
God,
all got sent.
I love him. This is amazing.
It's extraordinary.
That's incredible.
Absolutely extraordinary. So we had, yeah, he'd give us bank details and various passwords and stuff like that.
Michael, yes, this is what we talk about so much. Like, talk about it. Because that must have meant that whole process was so much easier.
In some ways, I think.
Or was it too practical?
I don't think it was too practical, but I think what we learned was that it doesn't matter how much planning you do.
Oh, really?
It's still fucking shambles.
But at least you've got a map.
Totally. Like. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know what he wants. And he sort of, you know, he said, I don't have strong feelings about the funeral. He was Catholic and very Catholic, but liberal Catholic. So devout, but not a prick about it. And so he sort of, you know, he wanted a proper funeral mass. He didn't have strong feelings about hymns, and he'd sort of tell us that. And then he was saying he wanted to be cremated, not buried.
It's unusual for Catholicism, isn't it?
I don't know, actually. Is it? Yeah, I suppose. Uncles have generally been buried.
I thought Catholics had to be. I mean, no, okay.
Yes, but they're pretty cool about lots of stuff now.
Oh, they're so relaxed.
Oh, man. Catholics. Woo!
Do what you like, guys. Just bring the incense, have
come
a sing.
Come on. As long as you're sorry after, we'll be fine. That's what I took from my religious upbringing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he said he wanted to be, this brilliant moment. He said he wanted to be cremated. And Mum said, right, where would you want your ashes scattered?
Yeah.
And he said, this perfect summation of my parents' marriage. He said, I don't really mind. You can put me out with the Tuesday bins. And there was this perfect pause. And Mum went, it's Friday. And it was there, right there. Right there is...
That's marriage.
Yeah.
That's right there. That's hilarious.
It was great.
I see your funny comment and I raise you a detail. An important detail that actually affects us.
Yeah.
Even now, you can't remember when the bins are, Michael. That's hilarious.
Yeah. I undermine you with your shittiness at chores.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So how did your brothers and sisters and you feel then when you were called to this council of war? Was it hard, or did you kind of all just...
It was hard, but it was also the first time the six of us had been in a room together.
Yeah, for a long time.
We'd had, you know, family dues with spouses and kids and all that kind of stuff, but just the six of us.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's just that family.
It was very weird and great. I mean, just, yeah. There's so much of the stuff with someone dying is feeling guilty about what a lovely time you're having.
So
the six of us together was lovely. And actually when Dad was then, you know, in the final few weeks, we were all round and we were staying at Mum's and this kind of stuff. And it was really nice.
Yeah.
But you've got this horrendous thing going on in the foreground.
Yes, in the foreground is a nice description of it, because it isn't in the background. It's why you're all there.
Exactly.
And then you sort of, when it's on the breaks as well, I think, isn't it? Like when you leave the room when they're sick or something, and then you're having a nice time.
Mm.
And you're like, oh, what? Oh yeah, why are we all here? Oh, yeah, because of that.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, this, what are we, how comes everyone? Oh, yeah, yeah, I forgot, didn't I? Because somebody's dying.
We seem to be laughing a lot. Yeah. And that's dying. Oh, but yeah, but that was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's really, I know it comes back to like the importance of family and your tribe and your community, that when these things happen, if you, like you said, you don't have to see each other all the time, but it's quite good if you get on, because in these big situations you will need to be together.
Yeah.
So if you do all get on and can communicate, it makes that a lot more pleasurable and happy and
yeah,
nice.
Totally. And I think though, you know, extremes of emotion and extremes of experience just bring everything into sharper relief.
Yeah, yeah.
So actually you do laugh and you do enjoy each other's company.
Well,
because all the other stuff falls away.
But you have to do that anyway. Like, that's what I think. If you already don't get on and then this happens, it makes it worse because it turns that up. But, like, that's why I think it's good. Like, if you can already have lines of communication open or as much as possible, you know, and I know some people that's just not possible for in their family. But, yeah, if you already get on and can have a nice time, then when this does happen, of course you're not going to stop having a nice time.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing, then people feel guilty. It's like, why are we having a nice time? It's like, because you're with people you like.
Yeah.
Like, that's, yeah, it would be really hard to not have a nice, it'd be like weird if you were like, well, we mustn't ever laugh.
Stop having a nice time, everyone.
Yeah, stop talking about any, because you can't talk about it all the time. That's the other thing, you can't constantly be like, they're dying.
Yeah.
So eventually you're like, so, did you see, did anyone watch Bake Off? Like, you just have to have something
else. Yes, but I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, yes. And Dad made me think of,
because also, you know, Dad, we all knew Dad would have gone, what's your problem?
Yeah, yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, that's what I think is interesting. It sets the tone is already set. So I guess is what I mean. The tone is already set. It's unusual for that tone. I think, like you said, it gets heightened very quickly.
Yeah, you don't have to invent anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So too often in life, I think people, and I include myself in this, feel like they should be having a certain emotion.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
And actually with stuff like death, that sort of falls away.
Yeah.
Because you just have to go, it's because it's so horrendous.
Yeah, there's no choice in it, is there? So I think the more you can just accept, like, and I would say, like, if you are laughing, great, because you won't be laughing in a minute.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So, like, enjoy that brief moment, because I promise you, if you're surrounded by death, you're going to be bawling your eyes out in about an hour.
Yeah.
So if you're currently all giggling hysterically, you don't really know why, it's because your body's like, oh, God, this is so nice. It's so nice. We're laughing, because in a second we'll be crying. Like, yeah, it's important, I think, to just accept those moments, let them happen.
Yeah. And so you get to be a toddler again.
Yeah.
The way that, you know, when toddlers fall over, they cry, and then the next second are fine.
Yeah, God, yeah.
And you actually, you sort of do that again.
Yeah,
it's just moment to moment.
It's so true, isn't it? Emotions just appear and go, and because you've got such a good reason for them, no one is like, oh my God, what's wrong with you? Everyone's like, oh yeah, her dad is dying.
Yeah, and I did that to myself, because I'd been diagnosed with depression about 6 months before Dad got ill.
Wow.
But my depression got easier when Dad was ill, because I had a reason to be sad.
Yeah.
It was very strange. That I felt guilty about it before then.
Yeah.
Because it was, you know, what a rogue and pleasant slave am I, and all that kind of stuff. And then suddenly, oh, there was a reason for me to feel like shit.
Yeah.
The weight lifted a bit, which is sort of awful.
No, I think it makes sense, because that's the thing with depression, is you have that bleak sadness without a reason sometimes. Mm. Like you said, you just feel it. So your brain is going, oh, why? Is it this? Is it this? Is this? And you're like, no, all these things are fine.
Yeah, and also, what is wrong with you? Cheer up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and
it's like passing a building site in your head.
Yeah.
Cheer up!
Which, if it happens in real life, you're like, fuck off.
Yeah.
But when it's in your head, you're like, oh, shut up, me.
Shouldn't I? Oh, yeah. God.
But yeah, it does. Grief, like you said, just makes everything very clear.
Mm.
And so if you are feeling depressed, then yeah, like, it's the world's greatest reason to feel depressed.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, you suddenly have a reason. You don't have to justify these feelings that beforehand have had no justification in your mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rather than understanding.
That bit of your brain shuts up.
Yeah. And,
which is really nice.
I've said this before, but like, when you're grieving, I read the same part of your brain lights up that lights up when you're depressed.
Oh, okay.
So, but I think sometimes when people are grieving, they're like, if they haven't been depressed, they're like, oh my God, what is this? This is awful. And you're like, yeah, because you feel isolated and alone, like there's no point. But you do have a reason for it.
Yeah.
Unlike depression, where you're feeling like, oh, like, well, there doesn't seem to be a reason. Like,
yeah.
So it's interesting.
With grief, you are more alone.
Yeah.
And there is slightly less point.
Yeah.
So, it's true. So that's normal.
Yeah.
Yay.
So did he die at home? What happened?
No, he died in hospital. He wanted to die at home. But he was too ill and things were too painful to move him. But the hospital were amazing. So it was a hospital in Banbury in Oxfordshire. And this particular ward, who were utterly brilliant and let us stay there the whole time. And we'd do night shifts and all that kind of stuff. And they were kind and slightly helpfully. My sister is a doctor, who let me get away with being an actor.
Yeah.
And she worked for one of the sister hospitals.
Oh, wow.
So she knew some of the consultants and nurses and stuff like that, which I think helped, which shouldn't have. So there's a bit of a, about that. But
then also, I think, who in that situation would reject that?
Exactly.
Who'd be like, no, we don't want any special privileges. We want socialism for all at this time when my dad's dying. You're like, take it.
Don't tell her who you are, Dr. Quinlan.
Yeah.
But in fact, I remember I went out for a drink with my brother the night after my dad rang us and said, it's terminal. And I sort of crumpled into a heap on the stairs for a few hours. And then went out. It was the last recording of the Now show of that series. And so I knew various friends had gone out for a meal. And I rang up Marcus Brigstock.
Lovely
Marcus Brigstock, who's a good old friend of mine. And I said, I know this is weird, but my dad's just announced he's dying. Can I come and join you at dinner? And he went, yeah. And he said, yes, of course. But then put the phone down. I thought, oh, fucking hell, shit, what are we going to do? And I got there and Mitch Benn had just started a conversation about replacing a word in a film title with the word poo. And so we played that game for ages with poo on a hot tin roof and all that kind of nonsense, and it was fine.
Return of the Pooh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they see
the two poos.
The Pooh who loved me.
Yeah, great.
It's endless. Look who's pooing now.
Pooh always knocks twice.
See,
yeah,
it's a good game. Play
it's
it.
A good game.
And so played that for a while. Hung out with these friends, and then I went for a long walk, and I ended up walking past the National Theatre, and a mate of mine was just coming out of stage door with his mum. And said, oh, how are you? And I went, well, I was just having a time. Yeah. We had a bit of a chat and then I continued walking and I sat on Blackfriars Bridge with a bottle of wine.
Aww.
And got a phone call from this friend's girlfriend saying, well, you're staying at ours tonight. And so I went and stayed with them. But the following night, which was amazing, you know, these people just pick you up.
That's so amazing that, and I think what's massively important about that story is that you reached out twice.
Yeah.
Twice. You picked up the phone and you said, I'm coming to dinner. Can I come to dinner? And people went, of course.
Yeah.
We don't mind you being sad. And then you bumped into someone and you didn't say, I'm fine, everything's fine, and walk away thinking, I'm dead inside and no one knows. You went, this is happening to me. So people were able to help you.
Yeah.
And I think that's so, because I think when you're in shock or sad, you just think people are going to reject this. Why would anyone want this near them? And what you realize, like that story is so great because twice people were like, of course.
Yeah.
Of course we want to help you. That's absolutely what we love to do. We want to help. And you've made it clear to us how we can help by telling us what's happening. I think that's so great that you were able to do that.
Yeah, I did that a bit, actually. You know, and I made a couple of phone calls that night of people who just went, of course, I'm coming around and all that kind of stuff. And I think, and certainly since then, I've been much more open about how I feel.
Yeah.
And I've had other bouts of depression, and if people ask how I am, I'll tell them.
Yeah. Be warned.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Don't ask me how I am, kids.
But I think that's so important because I think it's so easy to think, because your sadness can feel so bleak and like this huge well that there's no bottom to, that you think, well, why would anyone want to be around that?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be around it. And to forget, like, every time I felt awful and I've told someone, it's been relieved.
Yeah.
Within
absolutely.
Like 5 minutes, someone's gone, oh, I didn't, oh, we'll come to this or do this or, oh, all right. And or I'll talk to you. And you're like, oh, I didn't think anyone wanted this. Of course they do. They want to talk to you. They want to help you.
True. I think that also massively important is that people go, oh, you can say it. So it sort of allows space for other people.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is massive. And I it's weird, until you said that, I'd never really thought about it as allowing space for me to be sad. I always think of it as allowing space for other people to say,
God,
I feel like shit.
Which I think is also important, because then people go, Oh, I see. We're talking about it, are we?
Yeah.
Like, a bit of what happens with me when I talk about, oh, I say very freely, yeah, my dad's dead. You can see they're like, oh, well, I also know someone who's dead. And you're like, great, yeah, we can all talk about it. It's fine. Like, yeah. And then we don't feel weird. Like, we're carrying around this strange secret that no one knows about. But I think that's really good mental health that you rang, Marcus.
Yeah.
And also, I think making choice, like, good choices, I think... Like, you rang someone who's fun and nice and you went around a group of people who made you laugh.
Yeah.
And I think that stuff like that is invaluable to remind yourself, I'm alive, there is life,
yeah.
I can laugh, somehow I'll get through this. Like, this pain doesn't have to overwhelm me.
Mm.
I think that's, it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was a real lesson, actually, in that people are...
Yeah, people are willing to help.
People are there.
Definitely.
Which is great.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. So sorry, then you said you went for a drink with
your brother. Yeah, so the following night I went for a drink with my brother, just round the corner from here. We're recording near London Bridge. And we went to a pub just round the corner from here. I only remembered as I was walking in.
Mm.
I thought, oh, that's apt. And we had a big heart-to-heart.
Yeah.
But we talked about my sister and made a sort of pact that at no point was she going to become the family doctor.
Right, yeah,
and that,
you know,
she was... We had to be really careful that... You know, because she knew what she was talking about and all this kind of stuff.
We weren't
just going to bombard her with questions, that she was in this in exactly the same way that we are.
Oh, that's so lovely.
And so, yeah, and then we got drunk and told each other our biggest secrets, and it was, whew.
Yeah, quite
good
night.
It was good. It was really nice. It's cathartic because we just, you know, talked about Dad and talked about things we hadn't ever told Mum and Dad. And, we had a really nice
time.
I'm
an actor. And I don't know if everyone, knows that
I'm
yet.
I'm a thespian.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I think that's really lovely. And for your sister, because I can imagine the temptation to make her the family doctor must have been so huge, because there you've got someone who understands the language.
Yeah, totally.
And once a consultant's been in, you could be like, well, what did they mean? What did that mean? Like, I would have been like, please translate everything.
Yeah, completely.
But I think that's really honourable that you remember she's a grieving daughter first.
Yeah, well, I think, I don't know. We're quite good at pulling together.
Yeah,
and I think that's
like
sort
it.
Of what it comes to. And she was always going to, I think, take on that role.
Yeah, I mean, also, that's, I guess, how she can help
as
well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, to her detriment, I think understood more earlier on, maybe even than Dad.
Yeah.
Which must have been really tough.
Oh,
really
God.
Tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't quite imagine
really
knowing what's going on.
But I suppose at least, that's your job.
Yeah.
So at least you're like... It's funny, like, we talk about this, like, a lot of performers end up doing eulogies.
Right.
And then I think some people are like, how can you do that? You go, it's my job.
Like, yeah,
it's what I do. So at least with the doctors, like, it's what I've been trained is to understand. But obviously
it doesn't make it
less painful. So then he goes to hospital. And where were you when he died? What happened?
I was doing the night shifts, generally, the last few nights. And here's some guilt I'm never going to get rid of. His last night... The nurses persuaded me to go home because he was unconscious. And they said, just go and get some sleep. And I went home. That was his last night. And I still feel a bit... Fucking hell.
Well, can I tell you that I can't... So many people say I left the room.
Mm.
And I am now convinced that's when they decide to go.
Well, this is the
brilliant
thing.
Because they don't want to do it when you're there.
I hear this
so many times. People go, I feel so bad. I left the room. The nurse said this. And I thought he'd have one more night. And I'm like, I'm telling you that they're waiting for you to go.
Well, here's the magic. Because he didn't die in the night. He died the next day.
Mm.
So my mum was there
when
he died. And her sister was there. And mum didn't really want her sister to be there.
Right.
But her sister wanted to be there as a support.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the best possible reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Wanted to stay and support and all this kind of stuff. But and didn't really get the message that mum actually really, really wanted to be alone with dad. And then her sister realised that her parking was running out. And so nipped out to feed the meter. And mum leaned into dad and went, she's gone and I'm going to be okay. And he died. Yeah, amazing.
Oh my God.
And I'd gone round to my sister's for dinner. My sister lives in Oxford, so not very far away. And then I was running a bath for one of her kids and the phone rang and my sister shouted upstairs for me and I didn't hear her. And so she shouted louder, didn't hear her. And then eventually she just went, he's died! And that I heard.
That's how you found out.
Which was, I
love that because there is nothing, as a sibling, there's nothing more annoying than shouting for your sibling that don't hear. Like, Tom! Tom! And then I come into the room and I've screamed in his face. And he's like, why are you screaming? Because I've been screaming your fucking name! The phone for you! And he's like, don't fucking shout!
Yeah.
So I can completely understand
proper.
Her being like, I said it, Carrie!
How many times? It's died!
It's died! Oh, you hear me now? Oh, my God.
Not deaf anymore, are you? Yo, you can hear, he can't, he's died!
That pure frustration of just being like,
yeah,
please don't make me come and get you.
It's like being like 17 and 9 again.
Absolutely. And as people in the era of landlines, we can understand this. I can't move from this phone. You have to come here. I'm not walking upstairs to get you. But I do, I have to say, so many people have said to me, I left the room. And
yeah.
I think now as a parent, I can understand not wanting your child to see that.
I'm very big on telling people you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Telling people they can go. My mum's very big on this.
Yeah.
That people do hang around.
Yeah, because they're worried
and
they're fighting it.
And I think if you say you can go, it makes a massive difference.
We were all with him. I mean, I don't know what he was aware of, but my mum kept saying, it felt like he was more aware of my mum. She kept saying, you can go, you can go. It's okay. Because I think it's hard to, giving birth is hard, right? Getting a baby out is hard.
Right.
And I think dying is hard. Like for some people, you know, when they're
the two
Ill.
Big moments, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's easy to think like, oh, well, the disease is killing them, rather than like there's also another fight going on of them, like you said, hanging around or fighting it or not wanting to die.
Yeah.
And then having to, that's, you know, they have to, and obviously not for everybody, some people just drop dead and that's another situation. But I think, so, especially with cancer, I feel like it's sort of like you have to be like, you can, like you said, you can go.
I was very keen, the last few days, I was very keen on not saying, see you tomorrow.
Mm.
I'd say goodbye every night.
Yeah.
So he didn't feel he had to be there.
Yeah. And I think also the fact that you went and got some sleep is so human.
Yeah.
And those nurses must have recognised, like, perhaps they also recognise it's going to be soon.
Mm.
You're going to want to have had some sleep when
That's
it hits
true.
You.
Yeah.
Because it's about to happen.
Yeah.
So why don't you go and rest before the shitstorm that is coming your
way? Well, there is that. Yeah. We donated to the ward. We got them a reclining chair afterwards so that relatives could have a kip.
Snooze. Oh, yeah. That's so nice.
This was nice.
So you were at home and she screamed up the stairs.
Yeah. And we drove, so we drove up to the hospital, took care of mum. And then there was dad.
So you saw the body?
Yeah.
And how was that for you?
Incredibly emotional.
Yeah.
And I held his hand and I talked to him. All my siblings were and are married with children.
Right.
I'm not. And I held his hand and I said, I will have children one day and I'll tell them about you. And I got really emotional, which I feel another thing to feel guilty about because I'm not going to have children. but I'll tell you about him. And so, yeah, so I held his hand and it was really intense. Mm. Just sort of looking at him, unblinking, holding his hand, just talking to him and telling him how much he meant to me and stuff.
Did you feel like he was still kind of there?
No.
No, he didn't.
No, it felt, it was massively intense, but it felt like it was symbolic somehow.
Yeah.
It was a weird one.
It's weird,
isn't it? Because they are, yeah, and I know you've talked about this a lot on this before, that they're gone.
They're so gone, aren't they?
It's really, really odd.
They're so gone, but I completely understand, because I spoke to my dad after, I really was like, oh, he's not there. But then I felt like he was sort of there.
Right, yeah.
Like sort of in the atmosphere a bit, which is an odd thing to say, but just felt like, I remember just looking at the body and thinking, well, you're not in there.
Yeah.
But I still feel like you're here.
Right.
And I think like that need to talk and still communicate, like it's so hard to wrap your head around, because it's such a like sort of Stone Age primeval metaphorical thing happening.
Totally.
That nothing else in your life is like that.
Mm.
Like anything else in your life, you'd be like, well, why are you talking to the door? The door isn't doing anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
But it's something, it just makes sense. It just makes sense that you hold their hand and you talk to them and you say goodbye.
Yeah. Mum had a thing when she was nursing. If someone died, you'd open a window so they could get out.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we talked about
this.
And
I was quite big on that.
Yeah. So this is, I talked about this on another episode that, I think on the Robert Popper's one, that I was the only one who went back into the room. I didn't know this till recently.
Right.
I just blanked out what they were doing. But we were in the room when he died, and then we obviously left and they went and sorted it out, tidied it up. And then they said, do you want to go back in? And my mum and my brother said no. And I said yes.
Right.
So I was like, yeah.
Wow.
And I went and opened, he had these like, not French doors, like a slide, big sliding window onto a little bit, a tiny bit of grass, courtyardy bit. And I went and opened it because I remember thinking, oh, well, he can't get out.
Yeah.
And someone else wrote to me, a palliative care nurse, and said, yeah, that's quite common.
Yeah.
That nurses do it if the member of the family hasn't done it.
Yeah, it's a big thing.
No one told me to. I don't know why.
That's,
I just felt
that's
like...
really interesting.
Because I went in the room and I thought, like I said, it felt like he was still sort of there.
Mm.
So I opened the window and said, well, you can go outside if you want. Like, yeah. I felt like, you don't want to stay in here. Like, that'd be rubbish. This is just a hospital room.
When my grandma died, my mum's mum, my aunt was with her. And she was in a nursing home. And she could hear the cleaner outside going, can I turn it on now? I don't know. And Grandma died and the Hoover went on. And in my mind, she got sucked up. By this horrible thought. Well, not really a horrible thought, because she was obsessed with cleaning.
Do you know what I thought? She went and turned it on, mate.
Oh, see,
that's
no,
I
imagine her getting sucked up and actually it being what she would have wanted, because she was a neat freak.
Yeah, yes. Finally, tidy. Yeah. Don't want to be hanging around.
Last.
The tidiest I can be.
Dusty vacuum for eternity.
So you go to the hospital and you sort your mum out, and then the funeral, did you speak at the funeral? Or
I did a reading. So first my middle brother and I went to the funeral directors. We did that. That was our job.
That was your job.
Which, there was this awful moment, but brilliant moment, when the funeral director was great. That was on Dad's When I Die list.
Oh.
Funeral directors. I suggest getting in touch with Humphreys and Company in Banbury. We've used them for building work, so we know they're reliable. What? So I think it was like one brother runs the building side and one brother runs the funerals. But they had some building work done and they seem trustworthy and they know who we are.
Your dad
so
liked them. Yeah,
let's have them.
Aww. Okay.
So that was interesting. So we went and met them and they were great. And we were all, he didn't want a fancy coffin, any of that, cremation, all this sort of stuff. And then the funeral director said, now a lot of Irish families like to take the coffin and have it on the kitchen table the night before the funeral. And we were like, yeah, we're quite anglicised now. It's no, it's totally fine. That's, no, it's good. No, we're British now.
No, please don't. Please. So your dad wasn't Irish? Or like
His mum was Irish and his dad was half Irish.
Oh, okay. But yeah, he was... Yeah,
but he was born over here.
So it wasn't,
it was just like, God, no!
Because I know, then, having spoken to other Irish people, they're like, yeah, you have the body round, but yeah, you were way past...
No, thanks.
No, thanks.
No, thanks.
You can look after him,
please. You can stay here. He won't mind. Yeah. He won't mind. He really won't mind.
It's not on the list or the document, but we're sure. We're absolutely sure.
I'll just double check. No, nope,
that's fine. Yeah, I wouldn't have wanted my dad at the kitchen table.
No, that'd be weird.
I mean, whatever your culture and you feel comfortable, but if you haven't been brought up with
it. Absolutely, but for me...
Yeah, it seems really like, right. Oh God.
No, you're right.
I'd be thinking about it every time I had lunch.
Exactly, that.
I'd be thinking he was on that table.
Yeah.
No. And I wouldn't be able to sleep that night.
No.
I'd be so worried about...
I still have a thing when I go to my mum's. When I go upstairs, I have to switch the light on just in case Dad like pitches up and says hello.
Yeah, I know. These funny things still make me think, I just don't want you to grab me or scare
me. I mean, I'd really like to have a chat, to be honest.
I'd love to have a chat. But also...
I think I might be a bit freaked out.
Yeah, it might be really scary.
Somewhat. But the funeral was on Red Nose Day. So there was a very brief conversation that Mum shut down very quickly of having an open coffin and filling it with baked beans. So, yeah, she didn't really enjoy that as much as the rest of us did as an idea. But yeah, I did a reading. There were two readings, and there was one that was quite emotional, one that was less emotional, and my brother Matt and I were going to do the readings, and he did the less emotional one because he didn't want to cry, and I did the more emotional one because I was worried I wouldn't cry.
That's good.
So, yeah.
Good, everybody got what they needed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was.
Why were you worried you wouldn't cry?
Sometimes I worry that I'm dead inside, basically. So,
I don't mean to laugh. It's just a very common performer worry. I just think all these emotions because inside I'm dead.
I just think I'm dead inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was quite pleased to read something that would definitely make me cry. So the church was full, which was really nice. And there were people sitting on the sides of the altar. Mm. And a very good mate of Dad's, who's also a good mate of mine, was sitting there. And I thought, well, Pete's there, so if I do dissolve, I'll just hand it to him.
Aww.
And that's fine. And I learnt it so that the dewy eyes wouldn't ruin it.
Good performer, you.
Oh, yeah.
You learnt it. Good work.
And it was really nice. I was really glad I got to do it.
Yeah.
I've always really loved reading in church.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't
Love it?
It. Lovely acoustics.
Love it. Oh, splendid.
They knew what they were doing.
Gosh, can you mean it? Just mean it, love.
Oh, you can really...
They so rarely mean it, so when you mean it, they think you're really good. But I was really glad I got to do that. And it was a really good, really good funeral.
And then you said you went to Edinburgh 6 months afterwards.
Yeah.
So how did you cope with it? How did you find... Especially being... I mean, you're an actor and writer, but you... like myself, work a lot in comedy, which is full of people who worry that they're dead inside and make awful jokes a lot. Like, how was that around Edinburgh and comedy people?
Well, actually, long pre-Edinburgh, I was doing a little tour with Marcus. We do a show called The Early Edition where we go through newspapers of a morning. Yeah. And we did a mini tour of it. And about 4 days after, 3 or 4 days after Dad died, there was one in Kingston.
Oh, wow.
And I rang Marcus and I said, I know this is going to sound weird, but I really need something
it's me again. Yeah, I know this is going to sound weird.
Oh, God. I'm really sorry, Brig.
I think Brig must have done it back to you a couple of times.
I was just fucking high maintenance. Oh, God, yeah. No, he has.
Exactly.
That's fine.
I love Marcus, but I think that's a mutual...
Yeah, I think we're all right.
Yeah.
But I rang him up and said, I really need something that's my normal life
right
now. Can I come and do the show? I might be a bit of a mess, but... And he said, of course, come along, do the show. And so it was me, Marcus, Andre Vincent and Phil Jupitus at the Kingston Rose Theatre.
Lovely.
And we got there. And so before the show, we have about 2 hours where we sit round and read the newspapers and highlight stuff and ready to talk about it. And I opened the Independent on my dad's obituary.
Oh, my God.
That was weird. That was really, really weird.
Wow.
It was a very nice obituary.
So you didn't know it was going to be in there?
No. I hadn't realised it'd be in that. I thought... So he was quite high up in the Ministry of Defence.
Yeah.
So I thought there'd probably be an obituary or two around, but it hadn't crossed my mind. And I opened it up and there was a picture of Dad and people writing nice things about him. So I turned the page quite quickly.
Yeah, that must have been a real,
Kept that for later.
Oh, God.
Because, you don't want to open with that on a comedy show. What's in the papers today? Well.
My dad's obituary.
My dad died.
Did you bring it up in the show at all? Or you just...
I'm not sure I did. Yeah. I can't actually remember. Most of that time's a bit of a blur.
Yeah. That first year is just a blur.
Yeah. Completely.
It's just what happened.
Yeah, make no big decisions in that first year.
Yes, yes. Someone else said that, like, they, I think it was on Ed Morris's episode, actually, said that his parents had, like, had an agreement beforehand, like, the year after either of them died, like, no decisions to be made.
Yeah.
Like, no selling houses, no...
Absolutely.
And I think it's quite, I mean, you know, do whatever you need to do, but I think quite a nice... quite a good guideline of, like, you know, don't get your hair cut, don't like, you know, sell the house, just take your time.
Absolutely.
Because it is such a blow.
Because
madness.
You're going to make, you're not you.
Yeah, you're not
You're going to make the wrong decisions.
Yeah. And obviously, if you have to make some decisions, I'd make some holiday decisions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just be like, we'll do this.
I mean, if your telly breaks, choose a new telly.
No decisions, everyone.
Nothing.
They said don't do it.
Nothing.
But yeah, I completely understand that need to be normal. And I think that's hard for some people who haven't been through it, because they expect a kind of televised version of, like, she will appear, she will be sad, she will be crying, she will want no laughter in her life. And it's, again, I like, just because someone's died, you don't stop being you.
Yeah.
Like, Carrie, before her dad died, wanted to do fun things and make people laugh.
Mm.
That's the same, that doesn't disappear.
Yeah.
You know, you still, and also, in a way... like you said, you're not yourself, so you're desperately searching for things that remind you of yourself.
Absolutely that.
So you're like, oh God, that seemed familiar. I used to sit on stage and make people laugh, didn't I?
Let's do that.
Let's try that. And even if you do it and feel shit, it's like...
then you're among friends.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And you can just go, Marcus, and he'll start talking and you can sit there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's great.
He'll just start talking.
It's also really helpful having inappropriate friends.
Yeah, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. So the morning after Dad died... I sent a text round to various people I've been talking to about him in the last few months to say, you know, he died last night. Mum was there and we were there shortly afterwards and all this kind of stuff. And I got some really nice texts back. And then I got a message from Bridget Christie, who really is married to Stuart Lee, that said, look, if there's anything you need or you just want to talk to someone, call someone else. I'm a bit busy at the moment. And it was so perfect.
I love Bridget so much.
And so brilliant.
That's so funny.
And I ran downstairs and I showed everyone and everyone just roared and it was fabulous.
Oh,
but
God,
crucially,
that's so funny.
I forgot to reply.
Oh no! So she was like,
she's furious
with me. I fucked up.
Yeah, and she said, and she told Stu, and he, and apparently he said, do you two know each other that well? She thought, oh fuck no, we don't. Oh God. So the next day I got flowers. Yeah,
she shot herself,
and so I had to ring her up.
Oh God, I just didn't reply because I've been busy.
I'm a little bit busy, and it was the best thing. It was
so
absolutely
funny.
Cheered up everyone's morning.
Yeah,
it really did. It lifted.
But she had 24 hours of going.
Yeah,
I'm the worst person ever.
Yeah,
like, I thought that was an appropriate text.
So now it's called doing a Bridget in our family.
What I love about that though is that, like Bridget was right. That was a really funny comment, but I think most comics would have been like, well, fuck you for being weird. Bridget then felt so guilty she sent you flowers and did a normal person reaction. She was like, well, here's the comedy reaction. Okay, I'm going to do normal as well because it seems like that hasn't worked. Well, I think some other comics would have been like, whatever.
Yeah.
That's
can't take a joke.
The queen.
She really is.
That's
she
hilarious.
Really is. It was
what
brilliant.
A funny text. I would have laughed my
it
head off.
It was beautiful. And I got, and in that spirit, a few days later, I got a text from my brother saying that he'd been listening to music on the listening to his Walkman on the bus, and some appropriate tune had come up and he'd had a bit of a cry on the bus, but it was really nice and cathartic and he thought about Dad and it was lovely. And I just replied, poof. And then I started feeling really guilty. So I did a Bridget almost immediately after the original Bridget.
Sorry, I was only joking.
I didn't mean it. You're not... it wouldn't matter if you were. Oh, God.
It doesn't matter. Then crying is not a sign of... Yeah, sorry. That's hilarious.
It's a minefield, but it's just lovely when people pull stuff like that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And you sort of feel normal.
I mean,
again,
if you are somebody who deals with life in that way, obviously, I'm not saying, like, not everyone is down with the jokes. Like, that I have noticed.
Yeah, don't immediately take this as advice.
Yeah, some people want you to be respectful.
Know your audience.
Yes, know your audience. That's a great phrase, know your audience, because if they already work in comedy, they're already used to every inappropriate joke going. And it is that thing of, like, saying the unsayable that makes you laugh. That's what's making you laugh, that you know someone's joking. But I think it's so nice when you have friends who know they can joke with you.
They can pull that card.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Definitely.
And I do think that's why when people say to me, oh, like, you know, why do you predominantly talk to comedians? And it's like, well, it's not so depressing.
Yeah, because otherwise this show would be a real fucking downer.
Yeah, and I think people don't realise, it's like, comedians make light of everything.
Yeah.
So that means you can talk about death in a way that, you know, is...
Because they're already dead inside.
They're already, that's exactly...
Yep.
Most of us worry or feel or are convinced we're dead inside. So what more, what does it matter what we say and do and think? That's very funny. And yeah, so how was Edinburgh when you were walking around? Like you said, you had the 6 month anniversary. Did you?
Yeah, it was. It was very odd. And I here's right. Here, basically, this is today is a list of things I feel guilty about.
Yeah, sure.
And
you were raised by a Catholic. This is correct.
Yeah, does it show? I was walking. We did early edition. We did a newspaper show, and then. And only afterwards did it strike me that it was 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And I said to the boys, I'm going to go for a little walk. And I went for a little walk. And at one point I walked past Daniel Kitson. And he must have said hello to me, but it didn't register. And then he said something like, oh, suit yourself then. And I heard that, but I just kept...
Yeah.
And I thought, I've just ruined that friendship.
Oh,
I've just absolutely shattered that friendship by seeming like a moody old bitch who's not going to say hello to him. And I thought, and that's haunted me for 9 years.
Have you ever said to him?
No.
I feel like you should say.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't really see him very much now for some reason. And yeah, and I don't. I think it'd be a weird thing to.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
To say,
but sometimes it's hard to. That's, again, the other thing. Sometimes it's hard to express. Like we said, sometimes you can say what you need and sometimes you are just in such a fog that when someone's saying anything, you're like, I don't even know how to say the words, my dad's died, it's been 6 months and I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, it's, yeah. But I don't think... You can't have ruined a friendship from just... him.
I don't know. Maybe I've ruined it in other
ways. By all, like, normal means, you might just have not heard him. Like, even if it wasn't that.
Yeah, I mean... It's probably fine.
You probably, like, but if he was that annoyed, you could have said, Jenny, I just genuinely didn't see or hear you.
Yeah.
Also in Edinburgh. I've seen people in Edinburgh who quite clearly, it hasn't even been their dad's anniversary, but they have not wanted to talk to anyone.
Yeah.
And you can see they're like, just like, I'm dead inside. my review said I was dead inside. Huh. And so I'm walking down, crossing the bridge, and they walk directly past you and they're like, I am not seeing you because I do not want to talk to anyone. But that's how I tell myself. Maybe it's just me.
I get worried in Edinburgh that people won't remember who I am. And so I don't say hello to them. And then they do remember who I am. And then I just look like a biatch.
It's so complicated in Edinburgh. It's like being in a fucking giant common room for a month.
Yeah.
This is what it reminds me of. It's just the pressure of like, oh, are they now not going out? Oh, God.
Oh.
Well, how come that's happening over there? I thought those two people weren't friends. And, oh, God. So stressful. I think it's really interesting that you said you went for a walk, which is what your dad used to say.
Oh, hello.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
To say, well, let's go for a walk. And maybe in your head, you were very much having that conversation with your dad at that moment.
I do have chats to him still.
So perhaps that's why you didn't want to say hello to someone, because it's like, that means he's not here and he's not real.
And I'd have to introduce him and then they'd really think I was weird.
And also, he's met you before, you remember.
It's just like, it's a bit embarrassing.
So you still have chats to him now?
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah, quite a lot.
Do you? I still feel a bit silly. I wish I could be more free with it, but sometimes
I feel silly, but they're quite brief chats.
Oh, yeah.
but I felt very strongly, not that long after... he died, that I'd sort of internalised him. I knew, that it's that thing of, you know, no one dies until the people who remember them aren't around anymore. So I talk to him about, I tell him the cricket scores. We used to do a thing where, so not that long after he died, England won an Ashes test at Lord's for the first time in something like 80 years, which means he never saw.
Oh,
he was an absolute cricket fanatic and he never saw England win an Ashes test at Lord's, I think. There'll be letters. and so we wrote the score on a bit of paper and tied it to a balloon.
Aww.
And let go of the balloon and floated up. And so for a while we'd send Grandad the cricket scores with my nephews. And
oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, and until, of course, we realised that, you know, the balloons, single-use plastic. Not good.
I was just thinking, I'll get an email about don't put balloons into the sky.
Yeah.
It's so bad for the birds. So now, if you're composing it, stop. We've said it's not a great thing to do.
What I do now, yes, if I need to send him a message.
Yeah, yeah. How do you do that?
Is paper boats.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
So I do paper boats. And
with the cricket scores?
Sometimes, yeah. Not always. I'm doing it less now.
Yeah.
But if I need to chat to him about something.
The cricket scores aren't great at the moment.
Yeah.
No, you don't tell
him. On the cricket thing, I'm sure it's me. So I do that and I talk to him about politics because he was always really clear about stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a shit show and a shambles. Yeah. And you sort of go, what's going on?
Yeah, I think I less feel like I want to share stuff because it's been, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just things where you think, oh, we would have loved that. We always say, it's a shame he didn't have an iPhone. He'd have loved an iPhone. Oh, he would have. He was like really into the internet before. Like, we had the internet before anybody.
Wow, yeah.
And he was really obsessed with like, you know, he would say like, oh, this is going to change the world. Like, this is amazing. And he'd be like, you know, I can write something here and they get in America. Like, you know, Garrett, look at this. And I remember at the time being like, oh, okay, who cares? Like, he really thought this was the future. My mum and me was like, oh, we would have loved an iPhone.
Oh.
The fact they could do his emails on it, that would have blown his brain.
Oh, my dad wouldn't have known which way up. So it was,
Well, there you go, you know.
When I was at university, so when I first started university, it was the days when you had sort of one payphone between 30 people. And the 30 people I shared my phone with, every one of them at some point explained to my dad how a video recorder works. I'm trying to tape Morse. I can't really. And people just talking through it and then come to the bar and go, I've just told you that. Yeah, video. Yeah.
That's so sweet. He's
saying, now, I don't know how to switch the answering machine on. Right. You know, are you looking at the answering machine, Dad?
Yep.
You see, there's a big button that says on it. Oh, yes. Have you got it now? What? Press it. Oh, right. There we are.
Oh, I see.
It was extraordinary. And then I remember watching a Bond film, the beginning of which was set in the basement of the MOD that was all computers.
Yeah.
And just thinking, oh, fuck, we're doomed. We're absolutely doomed.
Absolutely doomed. What are all these machines? What's this?
When in the late 90s, he sits you down and goes, now, I've had an idea. Okay. He didn't sound like this at all. Now, I was wondering, would it be possible to tape a CD? Yeah, Dad, yeah, it would, yeah. Yeah, people have been doing that for, like, 15 years.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, he was rubbish.
That's so sweet. I'd love it if you'd just been like, no, and you were the first person to say
you
that.
You fucking what?
Tape? Okay, we need to call HMB right now.
Yeah, hang on. I need my pen. I need my special pen. I'm writing all this down.
Oh, he sounds lovely.
He was good.
Just bloody lovely. And thank you so much for going to talk to us about your lovely dad, Michael.
Well, thank you for letting me.
Pleasure. You can follow Carrie on Twitter at Quinlan_Carrie. That's Quinn, Quinlan, underscore Carrie, Carrie. You can follow The Griefcast on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. And do follow us, because sometimes I do book competitions and flower competitions on Instagram. Always worth being a part of. You can also email me, thegriefcast@gmail.com. The show was edited by Kate Holland, with thanks to Whistledown Studios, and the music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. And remember, you're not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.